This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Bates.
And we're going to try it again. So glad that everybody came back. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit more about the November-December topic. And Mr. Beats has just come back from Las Vegas, where he was... what were you doing in Las Vegas, anyhow?
We went to the Meadows Tournament. We went to dinner at Company at the Luxor, and then we went to Cut at the Palazzo. It was a very good weekend.
Ooh. Did you make any money?
No, I did not gamble at all.
What?
The only money I make is by committing fraud against the school when they write checks.
Oh, okay. Well, we all do that. No, we don't. Anyhow, the point was you were going to judge and tell us some stuff. So the first question I have is obvious. I mean, what did you hear that was interesting on November, December?
The affirmatives. I think, and I might be wrong, and I'm going to be posting the results packet up here soon, but the affirmatives, I think, won, at least in the octafinals, I think they won the majority of those rounds.
That's refreshing.
And I think that they probably, I mean, my guess is that it evened out a little bit. That might be, you know, that might be good or bad. It might be because, in my view, the negative has to defend something in some rounds that is just not possible to defend. And that, but... Anyway, so affirmatives.
Well, we had said that here. The negative had a rough job ahead of them. I mean, we had trouble coming up with good negative arguments.
Well, they have a rough job because, you know, according to most literature, I think that the compulsory means that there can be no exceptions or no. Compulsory means that it would include exceptions. And so... built into the affirmative is exceptions.
See, that we were arguing that in my team, and I have a great problem with that, because as soon as I have a lot of exceptions, I get very little burden on my side.
That's a huge... I mean, that's a problem. I mean, as it turned out, I mean, the case that we ran, we said that there aren't going to be exceptions except for medical exceptions. In our framework on the negative, we talk a lot about how the debate takes place at the exceptions, because if... Mm. Exceptions, if people that object can just say, I don't want it, and you say, okay, then where's the debate round going to happen? Right. So we say that, you know, built in, that the debate takes place at the exceptions. So really the debate takes place with the 5-8% of people that have religious or philosophical objections to getting immunized. So what that means is that a lot of the impact isn't as big, because you're only talking about a small percentage of people. I mean, the impact of people that are going to get or not get immunized is that. And also because most people do want to get immunized. I mean, it's a small population of people that don't want to get immunized, especially in the United States. We run out of everything, flu vaccine and all sorts of things. So the debate round really takes place, in my opinion, at whether or not there can be exceptions, or with the exceptions, not whether or not there's going to be. And most affirmatives, from what I could tell, really, the debaters that I saw that said that the definition of compulsory included exceptions, those people didn't seem to do as well. The debaters, the affirmatives that said, look, I'm going to defend no exceptions, those are the people that seem to do well, because it makes your advocacy very good. It makes it a clear advocacy, and I don't think you can access all of your advantages if you're going to allow anyone who doesn't want it to not have it. And then, you know, you're not going to be able to access all your the advantages. So anyway, so affirmative cases, a lot of people took very specific affirmative case positions. Healthcare workers was a very specific one.
But wait a minute. I mean, what do you mean that they were only advocating it for healthcare workers?
Yep, that only that healthcare workers ought to be compulsory immunized, mandatorily immunized.
And how did that? I mean, that seems to me. I mean, okay, well, I'm only going to pick one really obvious group that ought to do this, and that's all they would have to argue, and they get away with that as
well,
a
The wording does. I mean, in fairness, the wording really doesn't preclude that. I don't think, right?
It doesn't. I mean, they say.
Yeah, I mean, all it says is that it justifies compulsory immunization, but it doesn't say of who.
So people are running compulsory workers. People are running children. People are running bioterrorism. You know, getting immunized, having people be immunized in the case of a. You know, that one. There wasn't as much bioterrorism as I thought there would be.
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, bioterrorism presumes a scenario that sort of precludes the reality. I can't pick up, I was going to say I can't pick up a newspaper, but I usually don't pick up a newspaper. I can't look in my RSS feed without seeing 27,000 articles from every single source on immunizations and the force of immunization and the whole thing. I mean, my daughter sent me this thing today where there's now a mumps outbreak in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, so all this stuff is absolutely in the news, and why we would have to resort to bioterrorism to get information on something that, you know, it's the air that we breathe and it's real. And so to take it to that level of,
I also think that there's if it's immunization, that means that we'd have to do it before it actually happens.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a, I think that there is a statute, a congressional statute, Peter Van Elswick, my assistant, was telling me that there's actually probably a congressional statute saying that we can't pass a law to immunize something that isn't on U.S. soil yet. So there would be problems with that as well. But anyway,
but that
so,
doesn't mean we ought not to do it.
No, sure.
The resolution doesn't say it's not in the United States.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, a lot of people are assuming, you know, I mean, there's a lot of U.S. specific stuff. There is a lot of country stuff too, picking specific countries. I shouldn't say there's a lot. There's a good deal of people, which is the nature of the topic a little bit, because most outbreaks happen within the confines of a smaller area. It's not like the entire United States is going to have an outbreak. It's going to be one part.
Here's a question I have for you, Beats. Mm-hmm. So obviously Jim's concern before, I think, illustrates this. So the way the resolution is phrased, I hate using like the term, like it's like a policy resolution or it's not, but you know, in a sense it allows for pretty specific affirmative advocacies, right? Because it's not, the resolution isn't very specific in terms of context, right?
Yeah.
So did you find that that negatives had difficulty dealing with the specific scenarios that the affirmative was presenting, or did it seem like people were pretty well prepared on this first tournament on the topic?
Lots of theory debates. I think Jake, he was affirmative, I think, he was affirmative twice in out rounds and twice in from octos through finals. He was negative twice, affirmative twice. I think when he was on the affirmative, he won both rounds on theory, and when he was in the final round, he won on theory as well.
We should congratulate Jake and Beats and the Harvard-Westlake team on winning the tournament. That was pretty awesome.
Thank you.
But what kinds of theory arguments was he winning on?
Parametricizing, definitions of compulsory, topicality. I mean, honestly, he won both affirmative rounds with reverse voting RVIs, saying that if I win theory, because the negative ran theory against him, so then Heap says that, well, since the negative can run unlimited number of no risk theory arguments, they've run multiple ones. So if I prove that I'm topical or I'm right on the theory, then you just vote for me. We got judges to vote on it. He won it twice in both octos and quarters, running that argument, spending 3 minutes in the 2AR just focusing on that. I mean, it's a very, I guess, ballsy strategy, but, you know, that's what he did, and it ended up working.
On a related note, one thing that I noticed, so it should probably be noted that Dan Myers, the LD coach at Meadows, put together this, like, citations list, right?
I'm going to put it on DVD.
Right. Okay. So he sort of gave a little, like, people were giving summaries of what was being run there, and I noticed like a a very large number of counter plans. And it was interesting because we are sending a couple of kids to Apple Valley, but our first really big tournament on this topic for us as a team, you know, like big in terms of the number of people we're sending is Bump. So we were talking about, you know, what kind of negative strategies would work at Bump, and I'm not sure that
well,
counter plans would be hugely popular, but what were people running on the negative?
Well, the two big ones were offer incentives, and the other one was informed consent, where okay. You just have the doctor educate the people. Oh, and I guess
I'm totally lost.
Okay.
Informed consent. I mean, the negative.
Just advocates that don't do it compulsory. Just make sure that you talk to people about it. It's basically just don't force them
encourage.
To do it.
Wait a second. Isn't the negative supposed to be against compulsory?
Yeah.
Right. So he's saying so. It's like encourage as opposed to enforce, right?
Yes. You encourage them to get immunized. You tell them the facts for and against, and still let them make their own decision. There's actually pretty good evidence about informed consent. Like, I guess Finland.
I'm fine with informed consent, but it doesn't seem to be like going against getting a vaccination.
Well, I don't think that the resolution is telling you that the negative necessarily says it's against a vaccination.
Yeah, the debate,
I think it's more
the debate is mostly about whether or not we ought to be forcing people to do what they don't want to do.
Okay, yeah, that's what I think.
I'm fine with that. I'm just, yeah, it seems to me like taking it a couple of extra steps further to say,
really?
Here's how we're going to solve for it.
Well, I mean, in rounds, I mean, we would argue on the negative. We would say it's not like – we would say we both sides agree that vaccination is a good thing.
Okay.
You know, that most people should get vaccinated. The question is whether or not the government has the right to tell you you have to get vaccinated.
Okay. Right.
And that's what the debate takes place.
Obviously. Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's a very classical debate in that sense, right?
It is. Most of the debate rounds, even though there is more of a jargony and technical twist now than there was back in the, you know, the 90s, it's the concepts are very much the same. I mean, most negatives
sure.
are running some sort of deontology argument about how the body is sacrosanct and, you know, you ought not violate, the government doesn't have the right to take away that part of your autonomy or to violate that part of autonomy.
Okay, so the core then is, I can live with the core. Okay, I'm good with that.
Right. Yeah, that is the core. That is the core of the negative, of most negative. For people that weren't arguing in favor of that the body is sacrosanct and those sorts of things, people did run arguments about, you know, the creation of super viruses, that the viruses will mutate, those sorts of things. There was hardly anything run about implementation. I saw no debates about, well, who's going to pay for this? How much is it going to cost? Is there going to be any sort of trade-off that it just can't be done? You know, very, very little in the arena of implementation.
I mean, that's good for a variety of reasons. First of all, they shouldn't be arguing that. And second of all, immunizations wouldn't be all that expensive anyhow for everybody,
right.
No matter how you slice it. So it's better that they don't argue like that.
Well, I think the way we argue that we defend, we just say it would just take place however it takes place in whatever country they're in. If you're in France, it probably gets covered by the government. If you're in the United States, it probably gets covered by your insurance company. If it's not your insurance company, it's out of pocket or the government does it. You know, it's the implementation doesn't really matter. So people will want to get good evidence about the difference between countries that have immunization and those that do not have immunization. There was a lot of comparing of the most, you know, what things have most. And then, you know, lots of stuff about particular risks of outbreaks in different parts of the world. I found that, you know, a lot of the studies are overblown a lot of the analysis overblows the findings because you are talking about a small percentage of people that don't get immunized as opposed, you know, the negative doesn't have to defend a world where immunizations aren't available, right?
Right.
Although some people do argue that by making it compulsory, it makes it more readily available, that the government would then would have to make it available. And if it's not compulsory, then there's not the demand to create more vaccines.
Now, it seems like a very complex string to connect. I don't know about that.
Well, since we're talking about complex, I just want to return to the thing I was sort of getting at before with the negative. I was really struck by how many people were listing counterplans, and I didn't really see anything listed about it, like sort of a more traditional, quote-unquote, negative structure. Now, do you think that's because people wanted to report on, I guess, what they'd consider to be, like, the sexy arguments, or is that really what was happening at Meadows, that there was really an abandonment of more traditional structure, negative cases?
I don't think there was, and I don't think that most people did run standard negative cases that had to do with government intrusion. And they were typical. I mean, in most of the rounds that I saw, it was all about the government can't intrude on my body or,
all that sort of things.
I mean,
I just wanted to clarify because we were shocked.
Here's the problem with the if you're going to run that vaccinations are typically good, but the government isn't going to intrude on your body, then it's very difficult to run vaccinations bad, which some people also want as a strategy. So you can't run those two things together.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to, I'm honestly just asking because like I said, we looked at the list, we said, whoa, there are a lot of people running counterplans, we don't see normal things. I wonder I guess that might just be what people choose to report and find interesting to post about.
Yeah, that could be too.
Where was this being posted? I'm sorry.
On VBD in the comments for the Meadows tournament, it came out that people were at the tournament was doing what is fairly common in a lot of policy tournaments, where the younger kids on the team will compile what arguments are being run and share them with the community, so people get a sense of what is being run and who's running what, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And so the Meadows tournament, which also has a very good policy tournament, decided to do the same thing in LD. So I guess like little early reports were getting in, and people are sharing ideas, and that's where I read that.
Well, it seems to me, from the sound of it, there's so many different things going on that. I mean, we talk about case disclosure. I mean, some idea of what you're coming up against would be really valuable. Otherwise, the debate's almost pointless because you're just spending all your time trying to figure out what the other side is saying.
So. Yeah, I mean, the a lot more specificity started taking place, I think, in out rounds where people were, running much more specific case positions, like a specific smallpox or a specific scenario of bioterrorism or a specific outbreak and those sorts of things. Those came out a little bit more, I think, in the break rounds, just because you were going to risk losing on theory in order to have something that your opponent has nothing to say against. I think that became was much more common at that point. Lots of stuff on influenza. Some of the very weird things were different definitions of public concern. What would constitute a public concern? Like, one kid was running something about rabies. One kid was running something about depression.
Rabies.
There's no immunization against rabies.
I don't know.
Or depression.
I think you can immunize the dog, can't you? So that doesn't get, I don't know.
Yeah, you give a rabies shot to a dog, but you don't give them to people.
Well, the resolution doesn't say
the
people.
The resolution does not specify.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can immunize people, come to think of it.
But like I said, the resolution doesn't say people.
I mean, I'll be 100% honest. The case we ran was agroterrorism, where we said immunize animals so that they don't, so that our livestock.
It wasn't corn. You were going to immunize corn.
Not going to lie, Bronx Science may be doing some animal arguments that came out as well.
I mean,
there's a lot of literature on that. I mean, there's a lot of literature on that, but the government has to do stuff with animals. It's
it would devastate our economy if you also have what happened in Scotland, where they do have mandatory immunization because of mad cow and.
Right. No, exactly. That's exactly it. And actually, it's interesting because, like I said, there's so much of the literature actually does talk about specifically about immunizing animals or doing things in terms of your.
Wait a second. There's an immunization against mad cow for the cows, presumably, right?
But if all the cows die, I mean, it creates a public health concern because starvation.
But I mean, I thought prions were not susceptible to this kind of immunization thing.
Yeah, I didn't research that stuff. I mean, we talked more about just cowpox and black tongue and those sorts of things. you know, RAND published in 2004 that it's a very vulnerable part of the U.S. Homeland Security is livestock, huge livestock farms and huge whatever they're
You don't have
there.
To do anything and we get sick from what they're giving us. So, I mean, if you actually did something about it.
Well, the issue isn't the, what's it called when a disease can get passed from an animal, zoonosis or something like that. It doesn't even have to be, which is part of the problem is that a lot of, and we're spending way too much time on this, by the way, that part of the
this
problem,
is interesting.
Part of the problem is that since it isn't, for the most part, the diseases aren't things that can get passed from John Cruise is now typing away.
Not anymore.
Telling his kids.
No,
we can't run
no,
this
no,
case
no.
anymore. We can't run this because
that is not what I just said. I admit I did type a quick thing that says listen to the podcast when it's up. But anyway, okay. Not gonna lie.
The issue is that since it most of the diseases are not ones that could get passed on to humans, we don't spend time caring about it. But the impact comes not from that the disease will get passed on to humans, but that it would destroy, you know, the food supply. And that, yeah. you know, that could cause, you know, we would be, there would be food shortages, which could also cause, you know, economic problems too. But then I think the biggest problem there isn't the definition of immunization or compulsory. The definition becomes public health. And I don't know if that is a public health concern. You know, economic. I mean, you'd have to
that
get
sounds
a couple.
Like, yeah, that's stretching.
You would have
it.
To go a couple of steps. Then everything becomes a public health concern. Then, you know, every single bad thing that happened, you know, education policy becomes a public health concern because, you know, everything becomes a public health concern.
What about the thing that we had thought about would come up with the bioforce arguments? Was that
the biopower?
Biopower.
You know, I did not see, there was not very much Foucault run at the tournament.
But it was,
that
I think
I
it
saw.
Was run though, right?
It was
because somebody
run.
Was posting online that it was on there.
Yeah, I mean, there was some, not a whole lot though. You know, it just wasn't. It's, I
sure,
think
okay.
that be, I think that because there's so much empirics on the resolution, I think that, you know, it's easier. I think that there's enough out there, both sides of the issues, that, you know, it's easier just to find stuff
sure.
that actually has to do with the topic. To go back to healthcare workers a little bit, I mean, in New York, I think, is where the healthcare workers are saying we don't want to get immunized. I think that's where a lot of this debate is coming from, is that they want to make it compulsory in New York, and the nurses and healthcare workers are saying no. So it isn't a sort of common sense sort of thing. And in fact, I think that it is actually the experts on influenza and stuff that would say, you know, it's not that it's not that big of a deal. We don't have to, you know, they're just not afraid of it. And most of the transmission of that stuff comes not from them getting it from the person that has it, but instead doctors not washing their hands or nurses not washing their hands or whoever's changing the bedpans not washing their hands, right? It's not even – it's the surface contact that's causing it, not getting coughed on by the person that does have it. It's passed from room to room through just people not washing their hands.
But it seemed, I mean, the issue with the healthcare people is not so much them getting it themselves, because almost all of them are in the age group where it's the least problematic, at least the H1N1.
Well, right, is that the people are vulnerable that are there to get help, that are
yeah.
sick.
Yeah, so.
But that's the point, is that, like, it gets passed on from, you know, if I go into one and talk to one patient that has it, and I grab his, you know, his clipboard or something like that, and it's on there, and then I pass mm-hmm. it on. You know, that's how it gets passed on. Through surface contact, not through the me actually getting the flu and then passing
right,
it on.
Right, so
to
your own getting the immunization would be sort of beside the point.
Exactly, it's beside
yeah.
the point. So then you would still violate the entire issue of bodily integrity and for doctors, you know, who seemingly know what they're doing. To be forcing them to do it when they would be making maybe the most informed choice about whether or not they want to. You know, so there is even negative ground for something as specific as healthcare workers.
Yeah, I guess. It just seems like such an odd slice of the whole. I hate when there's a slice of the whole thing that's somehow supposed to represent the whole when it absolutely doesn't. It's not as if it's a statistical example. I mean, it's actually a very specific instance.
But the hospital is a hot spot. I mean, hospitals, schools are hot spots for viral infections, you know, things getting passed along.
Yeah, but as you're saying, I mean, they're not being passed along because I didn't get the immunization or I did get the immunization. They're being passed along for other reasons altogether. I mean, we should be arguing whether you should wash your hands or whatever it is.
All right. And I think some people probably ran that as a negative. Just give all the doctors Purell.
Give it to the judges and the debaters for that. Where was it? At Bronx.
We have mandatory Purell bottles in all rooms of the Bronx High
Absolutely.
School of Science.
I'm sitting Mayor here Bloomberg, everybody comes in and they're washing their hands every 2 seconds. I
mean, well, that is.
Did you inform the people at your school about what Michael Chagrin's dad told us about that stuff?
I did inform them that. However, I was told that it is a mandate from Mayor Bloomberg and Chancellor Klein. No doubt a very important plank
mayor?
In their reelection. It appears he will still be the mayor, but they have not officially declared a winner yet.
The polls are closed. So.
The polls are closed. I voted today, and the polls are closed.
All right. Who did
Good
you
luck
vote
to
for
John Liu, a Bronx Science alum running for comptroller. Who did I vote for?
John,
that could be a discussion in of itself.
You only vote for the Bronx Science alums.
No.
I think that John votes in circles. Like, what are they called? Where it's a circle. There's one small circle and then another circle outside.
A Venn diagram.
And wherever the person falls, whoever's closest, something circles.
Concentric circles?
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, wherever the person falls within that concentric circle, whatever it is, the closer they are to John, the better vote they'll get. That's
okay.
Who we'll vote for.
All right, thanks, Pete.
I think
through political analysis.
Hillary Clinton was not on the ballot, so it was very difficult for me to make a decision this time. But anyway.
Was anyone with a mullet?
Ouch. All right, you clowns.
I think you've talked about a lot of different things that people can look at because, I mean, this is – I mean, obviously, they're debating the topic before the topic starts, right? So they got a leg up because it wasn't – well, yeah, they debated on Sunday, right? So I guess, you know,
debated on Sunday.
You know, they had their choice if they want to go September, October, or November, December. And I can see why they'd go November, December. Why not? And it's sort of a good thing to do to get a leg up on
It's a good topic. I mean – it was nice to see negatives having to be on the defensive a little bit, or from the standpoint of having a maybe a little bit harder burden. I mean, the most affirmatives were pretty smart about how they defined what is justified, you know, having stuff in there saying it doesn't have to be the best option. Justified is a pretty minimal standard for action. It was good to see the affirmatives have something to sort of latch onto there.
Yeah, I think it was at Yale where there was like negatives. I mean, on the last topic, I mean, negatives were just flip negative. It was the only way to win for a while. I don't think that was true by the time we got to the Bronx. People had overcome this, but early on there was a great preference for the negative, and it was noticeable. Usually it's just sort of we think there might be a preference. This one's just ridiculously noticeable.
Well, I know going into the quarterfinals, we had two kids in, and we wanted to get affirmative in both. I mean, if we would have won the flip in either, I think we would have chosen AF, but we ended up getting neg in both. So,
yeah. Interesting. All right, well, that's good. That's good to hear. I'm just thinking. I know that Mr. Beats has somewhere else to go tonight because he's on California time.
Well, let's do the tech tip.
Tech tip. Now, before we do the tech tip, I do have tech tip music, so I'm just going
to...
Okay, so I'm just going to cue the music. It's now playing, although we can't hear it while I'm recording it, but I'll put it in later, so...
And it was composed by Jim Menick, I assume.
This is the exact same music, just I keep reprocessing it through GarageBand.
Thanks.
It worked for the Hen Hud 18 marching band, so it worked for the tech tip. Anyhow, this one comes to us from Chris Palmer, who recommended it to me. And the two of you will like this, I think. It's a little application called Fluid, F-L-U-I-D. And I'll find a link for it to put into the... I love saying this. I'll put it in the show notes. but what it is, it essentially, it takes a web page and makes that web page into an application. So in your doc or wherever you happen to have your programs, this is especially...
Oh, I know this
Mac.
One. Yeah, I know this one. Yeah. Yes, it's cool.
It's great. And so I put it in my doc. So I have, or alt tab to it, or you know, command tab to it, and it just sits there as a program. So for the two of you, because you're always entering stuff into VBD, you would always have it as it's a unique program rather than having to go.
Oh, you told me
browser.
About this. I think it's an awesome setting.
And I use it for Tab Room, which is Chris's, you know, our local version of the Joy of Tournaments. It does the same thing for registering for tournaments. But I always have this up wherever I sit at a computer because I'm always tabbing something. I'm always watching things go on and monitoring. And so it's just always there. So I can, you know, command tab over to it all the time. And it's always live. So if you have any kind of web page that you're always on, I mean, you can have a lot of them, but that would probably defeat the purpose, at which point you might as well just use a browser again. But just have that one or two that is just a regular standard program. I mean, because, you know, it's just perfect. And as I say, for me, it's been Tab Room. I think for the two of you, it would be the BBD. Anybody that has a site like this, it's really a strong recommendation on it. Very simple, very small. I don't think it takes up any space whatsoever. Very easy on the resources. But a good little program.
If you have Google Voice, you can use Fluid to create a Google Voice application so that when someone SMS your Google Voice number or leaves a voicemail, you can actually set up then a growl alert so that you will actually get an alert on your computer when you get a text message via Google Voice.
That's good. I growl all of a sudden. Seems to be everywhere. I have office computers.
Growl is pretty amazing.
I have an office computer that I can't get into because I don't have administrator rights. And so every day it tells me that growl wants to do something that I can't do. It just drives me crazy. And then, yeah, I would call up my help desk, but the long distance cost to India being so great, I really don't want to do it.
All right, this is getting mildly offensive here.
If you had a help desk in India, you'd know what I'm talking about.
My guess is that the India help desk, they do go by the name Bob or Betty.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, I mean, the problem is we have a lot of proprietary software, and they have no idea what we're talking about. I mean, we have a lot of stuff written in Lotus Notes and things like that.
Ooh, probably in Lotus 1, 2, 3.
No, not Lotus. This is 4, 5, 6. This is a little bit later. But, I mean, you know, but it's something that was very much written, very specific proprietary program. You call them up, and, oh, that's very good. I don't know. You know, what can I say? But that's beside the point. So Fluid is our recommendation for today. I would also recommend, but I'm not ready to make a comment on it yet, but I had to get one right away. Maybe next week, the Magic Mouse. I did get myself a little Magic Mouse. And it is a cute little son of a gun. It's just sitting there now, working out that battery. Running.
That's cool.
But it has all the gestures, right? It does all the gestures that the Mac does. So it can go from page to page by just like sliding my fingers across it in the web, you know, back and forth and things like
that's
that.
That's cool.
So I haven't mastered it yet, if you know what I mean. I know it'll do all this stuff, but I do it and it just seems to do it at random a little bit. So I hope that's not intrinsic. I hope that's just me.
I'm trying to avoid just going out and buying it. So that's what I typically do, just go and buy it.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. The good news with Apple that you don't ever go out and buy stuff because if you buy it from Apple and they mail it to you, you have to be at home to get it and all this kind of stuff and sign for it. If nobody's there to sign for it, they won't drop it off and blah, blah. So it can take you months to get a $25 thing out of Apple. Yeah. So you got to go to the store to buy anything from them. I have learned that.
That's fine. I live across the street from one, so.
There you go. Okay, what are our predictions for the...
I have a prediction. Yes. This is obnoxious, but it needs to be said on here. I predict that the 2010 New York City Invitational will feature mutual judge preferences in the Lincoln Douglas debate thanks to this podcast.
Thanks to this podcast.
This podcast generated a lot of good discussion, emails to me
about some of the stuff that we said. And
in other words, they were complaining about my tabbing from this
year. No, not at all.
I get it.
No, not at all. Actually, it was interesting because most people said that they had not really thought about wanting something different, but then they talked about what they would like in it. And I think it's also great that there's a lot of positive reaction already to Ridge announcing that it's going to use the mutual preferences.
Right,
and that's,
which we have to work
podcast.
Out.
We do have to do point, that. Yeah. We'll go bother Beats about that later on.
Yeah, but we have committed with Mr. Yastrzemski at the Ridge Tournament in the beginning of December to use mutual judge preference, and now we have to go out and figure it out. So it'll be fun to do. I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Indeed.
Looking forward to it. Okay, do we have anything else we want to do before signing off?
Looks like Republicans are going to win everything tonight.
We're looking at Virginia, right?
So my prediction is that the death of the progressive movement will be greatly exaggerated.
Oh, definitely. I definitely agree. I will be I'm still sort of pulling for John Corzine, but let's see what happens there. Oh, Bloomberg is crushing Thompson right now. My God.
Nobody's going to remember Bill Thompson.
Yeah, well, he's definitely the other guy. I should just note that over the past 3 months, I have received almost 2 Mike Bloomberg mailings per day, literally. I have not received a single thing from Bill Thompson.
Well,
and I'm a registered Democrat, so.
Maybe how much money Bloomberg spent versus how much money what's-his-name spent.
Yeah, what's-his-name.
Well, and Bloomberg has to win Democrats in order to win New York. So.
Yeah, it's New York City. All the Republicans in New York City are Democrats. I mean, that's always been the case. So.
It's true.
Okay.
All right.
Well, this was good, and I think we'll just see everybody next week. As we say, the website is theviewfromtab.blogspot.com. We're on iTunes. You can subscribe to us. And on that note, we will cue the Hen-Hud debate team marching band. See you guys next week.
Good night.
Good night.